So am I still waiting? Waiting a long time.
Waiting for tonight.
Listen to Review Man.
I know there are millions of people all over the world that believe in Vince Russo, that believe in sports entertainment extreme.
Triple X could not be here tonight, but it appears to me that you're a little sexually frustrated. So Mark Wahlberg and Tuff Hederman, if it sets you what, then you're going to get a little lesson in group sex. It appears to be like your sex rock.
Come on.
Let's talk about sex, baby.
And welcome to Review Away, John Pollock and Wei Ting with you. Today is going to be brought to you by the date January the 29th of 2003. How are you, Wei? How were you doing at the age of 18 years old when this historic NWA TNA event, Grey Star pay-per-view television screen?
How was I doing? Oh, man.
It was a Wednesday.
I was doing good.
Yeah?
I think, yeah. I think it was a...
I was getting ready for February.
Why? Why?
About to change my calendar. I was in the midst, probably, of my OAC year in high school, where I was... had a great schedule, where I had a... Actually, that would have been exam season. I might have been right in the middle of exams, actually, at the end of January, I'm thinking. So I was about to switch over, where I... My second half of the year, I got a first period spare. It was awesome.
Right, okay. You had exams in January?
Yeah. We were non-semestered, so we wouldn't do them all at the end of the year. You did your four courses for the first half, and then another four courses at the end, unless you were an OAC, and you were ahead of the game, and you could get spares when you didn't need 8 credits for the whole year.
OAC was great.
OAC was a breeze.
A lot of people don't know what that is.
Ontario Academic Credit?
Basically, it's
your fifth year of high school in Ontario.
It's a grade 13,
which doesn't exist anymore. We were the last year to have that fifth year. Now these little buggers have to do it in four.
Yeah, you know what? In hindsight, I would have rather done it in four because really, it was a waste of time.
No. Why cram it all into four when you could cruise for five, man?
Because then you can leave school earlier and start making money. Would you rather go do that extra? Maybe a little easier. Year of school, or would you just rather be done with school completely a year earlier?
Well, I could also have looked at it that, I needed that extra year to make some more money doing a side job to get ready for university. You have 5 years to save up money to go to university.
You could have had a real job after university because you would have graduated a year earlier from that to make some real money.
I enjoyed having
like we're
five
doing
years.
Right now. We're making some real... Big money.
The podcast dollars out there, through the roof.
Yeah.
Through the roof. We're going to open up our own Review Away Asylum one day.
Oh, right, yes.
How are you doing, Wei? It's been 2 days since I've spoken to you.
Yeah.
How was Montreal?
I was in Montreal.
On Tuesday?
I'm actually still in Montreal.
Oh.
Right now.
Beautiful connection we've got.
Yep. It was all right. We were there for... Actually, I'm not even sure if I was at Montreal.
Yeah, it's kind of up in the air. At least it was on Monday.
Yeah. Yeah, so... Well, if I did go to Montreal, I would have gone to a boxing event. It was just a press conference for Don
Mike
King.
Mike Tyson Promotions?
No, Don King. Don King Promotions. And I'm sure that was fine.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How's his hair looking? Good?
Just as usual.
Yeah. Don King is... Man, he's old now at this point, isn't he? He's got to be closing in on 80?
Everybody's old.
Everyone is getting old.
Yeah.
We are not excluded from that category of people getting old.
Oh, we're young.
Wei, were you an NWA TNA fan early on when it started? When did you start watching TNA? Was it not till they got to Spike?
Yeah. Yeah, I didn't even really watch.
So this was... What spurred you on here? Was this just the idea of Tony Schiavone being a heel that just inspired you to pick this one?
I suppose so. I mean, last week we were looking at, we just reviewed that episode.
Whoa! I don't know where this is coming from.
What the fuck?
Oh, there it is. It was an ad on YouTube.
What the hell was that?
That was really loud. That was a really ineffective ad that sounded like my computer was just malfunctioning, but that was actually trying to sell me a couch.
That sounded like your computer was screaming.
I was a little scared there. This is the new computer. It's like this.
How is that working out for you?
Much better now that I have the RAM situation taken
care
of.
How much RAM do you have?
We went from 2 gigabytes to 16.
16?
1-6.
Why do you need 16 gigs?
Because when I'm cruising in my car, I like to throw my laptop out and say, yo, 16 gigs, what up?
You like to do that. I hate those people.
Yeah, yeah. All in with my RAM.
All right.
Those gigabytes. It's faster now, so that's good.
So, no, yeah, well, that explains this connection. It sounds amazing.
Oh, yeah, it's tremendous for
lifelike. But yeah, I never really watched TNA back then. Oh, what made me choose it? Well, I guess I kind of wanted to carry on with the Vince Russo theme. As well, I wanted to pick something that was only 2 hours long.
I've overdosed on this man by this point. I don't want anything to do with Vince Russo for a long time.
Yeah.
We need to take a break from him. Yeah. Which is funny because we'll explain at the end of today's show what we're going to review next week, which I asked you about reviewing before watching this event. And what a great setup for what we're going to review next week based on this NWA TNA show.
I don't even remember what you asked me to review next week, but I guess we'll reveal it.
Oh. Well, no, we'll do that at the end.
Yeah, that's what I meant.
Well, you really don't remember it?
I'm trying to think.
It was a documentary.
A documentary. I'm trying to think of what documentary.
Okay, I'll explain it at the end, and it'll make sense.
Okay.
But we go back to January the 29th of 2003. For those that maybe were like Way and not really hard up watching NWA TNA from their early infancy, they started in June of 2002, and their idea at the time was that we are going to run weekly Wednesday night pay-per-views for $10 each. And Way's spending habits on NWA TNA reflected most wrestling fans who did not feel the need to buy a weekly pay-per-view to essentially watch their television show. And they had this idea that, oh, well, if we could get, you know, just a couple thousand people to buy these every week, this would be great. And their numbers did not do very well coming out of the gate. And in fact, at the end of the summer of 2002, they were very close to going out of business when Dixie Carter, who was a publicist at the time, got her family to buy in, and Panda Energy took over control of the company and really has been keeping this thing afloat 11 years later. But this was 2003, so still within the first year of TNA. They were still doing these weekly Wednesday pay-per-views from Nashville.
So was Dixie an owner at this time?
By now she was, yes. Yeah. Or at least her father, Bob Carter, was, and Dixie was kind of appointed as the president to oversee everything. But this was still year one, and the big storyline going on at the time was Vince Russo, who had been booking with the company since they started. It was, you know, Vince Russo was helping creatively, as well as Jeff Jarrett's father, Jerry Jarrett, the legendary Memphis promoter and booker. So, to say the least, there were two varying extremes of bookers. Some would like to say traditional and more sports entertainment based. I would decipher them as good and bad, but everyone has their interpretation of how things were. And I think watching this, it's interesting to see kind of the differences here of the booking, because I find you can really see the differences here at this point in time. But anyway, we had Sports Entertainment Extreme was the big heel group at this time, led by Vince Russo. So
what a terrible name.
S-E-E.
No.
Sorry. Extreme. There were fuck vowels starting off our words. It was S-E-X.
Yeah, what a terrible name.
But what great opportunities to do play on words throughout this whole broadcast.
I mean, imagine being like a...
I'm
like,
part of sex.
Imagine being like an 18-year-old kid. Your mom walks into your room. What are you ordering on our pay-per-view system, Billy? I'm watching sex on TNA.
Or your parents walk in right as you watch a man with four buddies surrounding a ring saying, you're about to feel group sex. I always hated the name TNA. It was so dumb. Like, it was designed exactly for the tongue-in-cheek resonation of what that meant. And I thought that was the lame. That's what you're going to call your company, a playoff of tits and ass.
Uh-huh.
Let's watch some tits and ass for $10 on pay-per-view. I guarantee you, over the years, there were people that bought those $10 shows thinking it was porn.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I don't know, Explosion, Bound for Glory.
Yeah, girls in cages, and who knows what was going to happen.
Yeah.
So anyway, we start off this show with a recap of a tag team called Triple X. There really was a very...
Were they not in SCX?
Triple X was a part of SEX.
Yeah, okay.
Triple X, consisting of Christopher Daniels, Loki, and Elix Skipper.
Uh-huh.
Who, I guess, if you were just to look at their 8x10s, maybe would give off an impression of male porn to some.
Yeah, sure. Okay.
Because, you know, athletic men without shirts on.
Yeah.
And now I'm envisioning, like, Loki in a porno.
Open your mouth.
Oh, I don't even want to review this show now. Anyway.
Oh, man. Wow.
They had just defeated...
You think that'll make it into a promo on TSN Radio?
Probably not. Yeah. Probably not. At least no one would be willing to voice it over for us.
No.
They defeated AMW the past week. Might as well have called them ATM if we're playing off the theme. AMW.
What does that stand for?
ATM?
Yeah.
Go Google it. Oh, okay. I'm not talking about a bank machine. Anyway, they kept the tag titles. Our announcers are Mike Tenay and Don West. And they're coming off of what was actually a pretty memorable moment in NWA TNA history, because it was the prior week that Raven showed up unexpectedly and stole the NWA title, joining Vince Russo's group. And this was after Raven had been let go by the WWE. And rather than have his 90-day no-compete clause where he would get his downside and be paid, he waived that in order to show up in TNA. And it was actually a pretty big debut at the time with Raven showing up. And this would lead to a really big match at the time with him and Jarrett.
He said, no thanks. I'm not going to collect my money.
For free.
I'm going to join SEX.
I can't go without sex for 90 days. So the non-virgin Raven flew into the TNA asylum. He was, all jokes aside, Raven was doing so little in the WWE that I remember hearing at this time that... on the indie scene, this guy was actually making more than he was in the WWE at the time, because outside of WWE, it's like your hotels are covered for, your transportation is all covered. And this was at a time where you could still make a good amount of money on the indie scene. You know, some people do today. But Raven was one of those guys who, that 2003, 2004, he was able to do TNA, and TNA also let you do other stuff like Ring of Honor at the time. So you can make a pretty healthy living at this point. It was kind of a golden period, at least, for independent talent, with a lot of kind of offshoots at that time in the wake of WCW and ECW going out of business.
If you're at that level.
If you're at that level, of course. And Raven, at least was at this time, still in very good shape in 2003. Mm. And were you a fan of Don West here on the show?
You know, you compare, I mean, if you were to compare Don West to Taz of today, I think I'd prefer Don West, but I was never a big fan of Don West in general, just because, I mean, he is who he is. He's an infomercial salesman, and that certainly came across here. There are times on this pay-per-view where he would scream so loud about the most meaningless things. It just sounded like he was the only person excited in the entire building about the, Sonny Siaki versus
Jorge Estrada.
Like it was the biggest thing in history.
Yeah. Well, there was a certain charm to Don West in that I'm not going to kill a guy for just being so enthusiastic. Like he would, there were some times that he would, I always remember this one where Amazing Red was challenging for the X Division title and they cut to Don West and he is standing on the announce table chanting, "Let's go Red." And it was just the best visual ever. Like it got Red over to a degree with his audience where Don West was just like the biggest cheerleader for these guys. And he was someone that I know a lot of people hated him at the beginning, but by the end, I enjoyed Don West.
I remember as a manager, I thought he was pretty good.
Yeah, they kind of experimented with him near the end as a heel manager. But he was someone that I think is somewhat missed from TNA that could have been utilized on camera in some varying capacity.
He was doing very well in the merchandising department.
They cut to Raven, who appears with the title, saying that possession is 9/10 of the law, and lists off previous champions like Harley Race, Jack Briscoe, Dory Funk Jr., but a revolution is happening. And he tells Jeff Jarrett that he will urinate in his bone marrow. A first in pro wrestling insults.
First in insults, period. I don't know anybody.
First of all, if you have opened up my bones to reveal the marrow, damage done. Like, you don't have to worry about pissing on top of it and giving me some infectious disease.
It'd be hard. It'd be hard to get in there.
Yeah. He says, a wise man once said, you will remember the things you survive more than the things you enjoy. And then Jeff Jarrett attacks him with a trash can, is beating him with it, reclaims the title, and then sets up a table in the ring. Russo runs out, grabs Jeff Jarrett's legs on the corner, and Raven suplexes Jarrett through the table. And then Raven and Russo take the title and get chased out by babyfaces Ron Killings, Jerry Lynn, and America's Most Wanted.
Yeah, and at this point, they were still very much branding themselves as TNA rather than TNA, NWA rather than TNA.
Yeah, they really pushed the NWA affiliation very, very hard. I mean, they had been given the rights to the NWA title, and I guess part of the agreement, too, was that they would promote NWA dates on their pay-per-view at the time before they had their falling out in 2006 and just pretty well got rid of it.
How did you like Jeff Jarrett as the top babyface?
I mean, there was the natural comparisons at this time to Triple H, that here's a guy with a, you know, certainly an influence on the product. But I always felt that Jeff Jarrett, I didn't feel he was always the best guy to be on top. But I think that as we look back here, I think completely capable of being in that babyface role. But I think the fact that his father was the booker and he was so tight with Vince Russo that you got that natural kind of resentment towards him always being in that top position. And there were times that they left that title on him way too long and didn't freshen things up on top.
Yeah, I suppose to start it was worth trying out, but I mean, there's just something about the guy, though, that just he screams, you know, dick. Like, naturally cocky, blonde-headed dick.
Well, yeah, and he was a babyface at this role, so I guess didn't quite resonate with you.
Not me.
The dick. Goldilocks. Here is a blast from the past. You know, I remember I watched quite a lot of these NWA TNA pay-per-views back in the day. And I remember Goldilocks just being, female announcer in the back. Nothing really memorable about her. And then watching this show, Way, maybe it's just because time has surpassed so much. But my God, is this woman atrocious in this job. Like, she was so bad. And I was like, wow, I don't recall this woman being so aloof at the time. But she's terrible.
She was awful. She reminds me of, Kristen Wiig. When she, like, Kristen Wiig is playing, like, a character on SNL where she has to talk really low, with low, kind of like me, like, with very low energy.
I enjoy your comparison to Goldilocks.
Yeah.
You have real tits, though.
Oh, yeah.
As Ricky Morton would showcase later.
Yeah.
She's talking with Jorge Estrada, Way's favorite, about Mike Sanders offering him an olive branch to join sex, to be in sex together. And he hasn't decided yet. And Goldilocks is just stunned by this knowledge. He's even contemplating this. And he explains, well, my career isn't going anywhere right now. It's not going very well. What would you do, Goldilocks? Would you have sex in your career, or would you not have sex? Goldilocks just looked puzzled here as Estrada walked off. And Estrada was going through a rough patch because the very first match on NWA TNA, the very first episode, which we have reviewed, they had the Flying Elvises, which consisted of Estrada, Jimmy Yang, and Sonny Siaki. And they had both moved on at this point. And Jorge Estrada, the last member of the Flying Elvises.
Great.
The Lone Elvis, flying solo.
Mm-hmm.
We got a recap then of the last couple of weeks of NWA TNA. which in theory, I like this idea. That you can't expect, I think, your audience to be watching every single week.
Yes.
So it was smart here. Do a kind of a video, kind of catching you up to date, much like how Superior Spider-Man starts off.
Comic books, yeah.
Exactly. They bring you. Do all comic books do that?
Yeah.
I only have one example to make. So.
Oh. They all do.
Universal for a reason. So basically, we have the whole sex storyline against the tradition of the NWA.
I'm just imagining like the people that listen to our podcast, maybe like in the car with their girlfriends or their wives, or maybe their parents even. Sex storylines.
Yep. Sex sells. That's what this video said.
Yep.
Sex sells.
There was a very, very much a, obviously an NWO ripoff feel. Just even watching these little recaps of this sex group, where it just seems like in the 6 months, how long has this thing existed? Like not even.
I think it had only just started in the last like month or so.
In the last month or so, it seemed like half the roster was a part of this stable.
They had quite a lot of people.
They're already overcrowded here.
It seemed like it was just trying to find somebody from the past to show up every week. They had Dusty Rhodes, Percy Pringle, who originally was going to join Sex, because no one screams Sex louder than Percy Pringle. And then they swerved him, and then they attacked Pringle. Russo, in a promo, claims to have made Jeff Jarrett and The Undertaker, which was hilarious. We had the reveal of Mr. Wrestling as Nikita Koloff, who had a legendary feud with Dusty Rhodes. Uh-huh. First little hint of what we might review next week. Roddy Piper showed up for a promo. Bullet Bob Armstrong at the time was the commissioner of NWA TNA. We saw Nikita Koloff deck Dusty Rhodes and teases that he might not be with anyone. And then Scott Armstrong, the thread to the last couple of shows we've done, mm-hmm. attacking his brother BG. And then Jarrett retaining the title from Christopher Daniels the week prior when Raven debuted to steal the title. So a big shift here, a faction warfare going on here, Way, as the NWA was trying to get rid of Sex.
Yes.
Entirely.
It really just felt like more of the same of pro wrestling of this era from the 90s. Just the convoluted faction wars with half the stable and people taking shirts off to reveal their allegiances. And swerves, even in this little recap, it just kind of came across to me like this was your typical Vince Russo show.
It always seemed like with angles like this that they really didn't have their thumb on an idea of who is our audience right now. It's like we're going to base this whole storyline around the fact that, you know, the internet crowd is everybody, and we're going to play off all these innocuous facts and all these shoot comments, while at the other side of things, it just seemed that, I mean, maybe that was just their idea. It was like only the hardcore people are tuning into this, but then pushing the fact that's the whole cause here of the heels, is that's not what wrestling is. Wrestling is this entertainment base, and it just seemed like, to me, it was so overdone to watch this in 2013 that even at the time, this didn't feel like something that was really revolutionary. It felt like this was just a Vince Russo storyline, mm-hmm. and he was just...
Oh, like a continuation of WCW.
It felt like this was a lot of his anger about WCW to be played out here in NWA TNA. Mm. Our first matchup was Amazing Red against Jorge Estrada. Mike Tenay informs us that he was contacted by a former associate who will be speaking later tonight. The match begins with Estrada missing a springboard split-legged moonsault, then applying a half crab onto Red. Red eventually came back, hit his Code Red counter, and then comes off the top into a Northern Light suplex for a two count, and then hits the infrared, which is basically the spiral tap off the top rope, and pins Estrada at 6 minutes and 17 seconds. So Estrada's losing ways continue here. And Mike Sanders comes into the ring, continues to recruit Estrada, but says he needs an answer today.
Mike Sanders is a member of Sex.
Yes, yes. Mike Sanders is all about Sex. He was, of course, you might remember from the Natural Born Thrillers in WCW. And they get into a shoving contest, and then Sanders... is being shoved by Estrada when from behind Disco Inferno shows up with a chair and attacks Estrada, and they announce that he is the director of talent development for Sex.
That is correct. And it just,
I didn't even recognize him at first. It was like this long shot, and then I don't think they even... It was like a couple minutes before they acknowledged him as Glenn Gilberti. This might have been his debut. I'm not quite sure.
Okay. I mean, just to me, it just felt like a lot of WCW leftovers that the WWE didn't pick up.
Yeah, that was TNA in 2003.
It kind of still is.
Goldilocks is with Bob Armstrong, who's got a lot of problems with Raven for stealing the title. Jarrett runs in and just picks up Bob and puts him against the wall, demanding that Vince Russo and Raven appear in the ring. And I wrote R-Truth here, but it was The Truth, Ron Killings here, who separated Jarrett and Armstrong together. And this would kind of be our show-long storyline of Jarrett trying to get possession of his title back. Then we had, speaking of leftovers, David Flair, who I swear to Christ, I watched these shows back in the day. I never remembered this man being a part of TNA, but he was part of Sex as well. Taking on Jerry Lynn, the ultimate mismatch maybe in the history of the TNA organization. David Flair and Jerry Lynn.
This is while Rick was in the WWE.
Yes, it was. And Flair had been a part of... OVW at one point after WCW went out of business. You remember the WrestleMania angle with Undertaker and Ric Flair, where Undertaker went to OVW and bloodied up David, but right. It was eventually cut, and TNA just jumped on him.
Mm-hmm.
TNA signs Flair.
Yeah.
Huge signing. Flair runs into the corner, misses him, and falls to the floor where they fight. It's all Lynn beating down Flair with stomps, attacking the right leg, applies the figure four, which surprisingly got very little reaction from this crowd of Flair being in his father's namesake move here. Flair knocks into the referee and grabs his foreign object. You know, a lot of heels have had objects over the time. I mean, you have the Mountie with the shock stick, Jim Cornette with the tennis racket, even Paul Heyman with a cell phone, kind of goofy. Nothing takes the cake than David Flair, who grabs the ever so mysterious burlap sack, the contents of which would be a mystery. And he grabs this burlap sack, and Truth, Ron Killings, runs out, grabs the burlap sack, and then accidentally hits Jerry Lynn in the head. But we don't know what he has been hit with, as David Flair pins Jerry Lynn at 5 minutes and 11 seconds as the announcers debate if it was a mistake or not by Killings to hit Lynn.
Oh, man.
What is in that burlap sack?
Yeah. I could only imagine. I don't know. Maybe more sacks?
Was it maybe like their TNA's own kind of ironic statement that, you know, David Flair would have to carry something around all the time so that you'd see the opposite when the bell would ring,
right,
maybe.
Right.
I don't know.
Hey, I actually thought Flair looked all right here. I mean, certainly compared to what I've seen of him in WCW, he had improved a bit.
I didn't really get much of a... I mean, he was just kind of selling here. I mean, didn't look completely out of place
but he didn't look out of place.
I didn't think this was any kind of good match or anything, but he was there. Maybe they were going to build up to one day where, like, they would open the bag and it would be a big explosion and Rick would show up and that would be his debut. And all this time, Rick had been in the burlap sack.
He's in the sack, okay.
Yeah. Be right up there with, remember when they did the angle with Stacy Keibler and she revealed what was in that carriage that she had been walking around with, and it turned out it was an 8x10 of Sean Stasiak.
Okay.
She gave birth to. She gave birth to an 8x10 in WCW.
Yeah.
There's a video recap of B.G. James and his history since getting involved with Sex.
Why did they call him B.G. James?
Brian something James, I think, and they just called him B.G.
Well, why do they keep
short?
James, but you know, they're carrying on with this Armstrong feud?
I don't know why. I don't know why they didn't call him, like, B.G. Armstrong, or he just came in and he was B.G. James, and they went with that because he was the road dog Jesse James for a while.
Yeah.
And then I guess they took Brian, and I don't know if G was a middle name or something. I don't know where it comes from.
Okay.
Anyway. And talks. They feature here about Russo and how BG joined Vince Russo, turning on his own father, Scott Armstrong, confronting BG and taking off his ref shirt to attack BG. And then Tanay does this sit down while BG was wearing the most gaudy looking outfit I've ever seen. It was like this giant orange sweater. And then like something that was like out of Scotty Too Hottie's wardrobe, like this orange and yellow hat. Mm-hmm. And it was like,
this was what he was wearing back, like, during his the end of his WWE run with R-Truth.
And, I mean, BG's in much better shape right now, but it's like, he's had a lot of substance issues in the past, and he had the physique of someone that's had a lot of substance problems. Like, he was so big, and he wasn't tanned, and he just, and this orange color scheme just pronounced, like, his weight. Yeah. Like, he just looked really out of it here. Anyway, he talks to Tanay about how he wanted to be a pro wrestler, but he became a sports entertainer. And he had creative differences with Jeff Jarrett in the WWF. And Vince McMahon held a grudge against Jarrett, and he got back at Jarrett by making Road Dogg the real Double J. And it was a gimmick that sucked. But he went on to become, get this, the most entertaining man in the WWF, selling out Madison Square Garden 20 weeks in a row. Wow.
Yeah.
I missed the year where they spent a third of it running Madison Square Garden and Road Dogg was in the main events. So
he's the most entertaining man in...
I guess when you're a heel, you can just make shit up. He's got platinum records, and his family is jealous of him. And this is when Scott runs in on this shoot interview, and Mike Tanay has to cut the shoot short. Can't air this. These brothers having a shoot grievance on camera.
Just as it got interesting.
Yeah, there were lots of these interviews at the time with Mike Tanay and just trying to present these as all legit.
Yeah, a lot of these, a lot of these storylines I found on this show were based off of either, you know, real life relationships like, you know, these guys and their brothers, or previous relationships in other companies like their Double J feud from the WWF or feuds from WCW carried on here.
Kind of reminds me a lot of what we've seen now with the buildup of Tito Ortiz and Rampage Jackson, where so much of it has been focused on fuck UFC and Dana White. And it's just like kind of dumping on your former promoter, which is like the number one promotion in their chosen field. It's like a lot of that was in TNA, where it's like, WWE sucks. We're the cast-offs. Mm-hmm. And kind of just dumping on Vince McMahon and the WWF at the time.
I mean, is that, though, what else could they have done, you know, in their infancy, in their first year in? Nobody knows really who these guys are outside of what they were before.
I've always liked the idea, though, of, you know, okay, BG James, people are aware of him. I want to see him now in a completely different world where the WWE doesn't exist and he is a new character and he is something completely different. I don't want to hear shoot interviews about the political drama in the WWE. I just don't think any kind of fans gravitate towards that kind of stuff. I mean, you were a pretty hardcore fan at the time, and this didn't draw you in at the time.
I wasn't really a fan. I mean, I wasn't a fan of
this was happening every week. They were doing this shoot stuff.
Yeah, but this Tony Schiavone deal coming up was very entertaining.
Oh, this was going to sell huge.
Yeah.
Chris Harris and James Storm come out. America's Most Wanted. What a young-looking James Storm here at this time. And Harris just cuts like 1975 babyface promo here, giving the people 110%. They fought all comers as champions. They held the title for 16 weeks. Apparently that's a huge feat in Vince Russo's booking. And then they lost the titles, won them right back, and they want a rematch against Triple X for the titles tonight. Mm-hmm. And then BG, Mike Sanders, the Harris brothers, and other members of Sex come out. And BG says that Triple X is not here tonight, and they are going to get a lesson in group sex. As BG, this was just an exercise in how many sex jokes I can make here. Like, he was in on the fun here.
And how embarrassing do you think it must be for these guys to watch these shows back, having to say these lines?
As six men circle two other guys and say that you're going to find out what it's like to take part in group sex. Like, that's as close to to a rape reference as you're going to get, I think, in a wrestling feud.
Sure.
So group sex began, and then we got...
who comes out for the save?
Yes.
In the year...
Senior sex. Ricky Morton and Robert Gibson, the Rock and Roll Express, run in and got a surprisingly good pop here for 2003 in Nashville. This is one of the most famous babyface tag teams ever.
I know. I understand. I guess I'm just amazed. Okay, so they come in for the save to break the Rock and Roll Express versus yes. Sex.
They run in with chairs, get the babyface reaction, and what? How do they book one of the legendary babyface tag teams? They turn on America's Most Wanted, attacking them with chairs, and we hear the quote... I guess you like your sex rough. As they beat down AMW, one Robert Gibson was, they were both wearing the same TNA t-shirt. One was wearing it forwards, one was wearing it backwards. I spent the whole time here trying to figure out which one was right here, which one was correct and which one was backwards. One thing that was backwards was the booking here. As the Rock and Roll Express, the crowd just went indifferent when they realized, oh, they're heels.
They joined sex. Nothing says sexy like two 50-year-old men with mullets.
Well, more on them next week and on
they're
tonight's
the
show.
They're the MILFs of sex.
The Midnighters, I'd like to forget.
What?
MILFs. Why, from a logic standpoint here, Wei, why would sex, why would they want these old guys to join them? Aren't the epitome of what they're working against?
Well, that was the idea, right? These guys are supposed to be traditional NWA champions. And they would explain in a promo later why they felt that they're appropriate to join sex.
Like from just a psychological standpoint.
Maybe they're looking to have sex because I don't know. Maybe they haven't had sex since the 70s.
They were confused.
Yeah. Is this the sex club meeting?
Do you guys want to have some group sex on Wednesday night on a pay-per-view? We're going to pay you guys to have some hard sex with chairs. Brother, we're down. Ricky Morton and Robert Gibson's wandering eye. Have you ever seen Robert Gibson?
I have, yeah, especially in this show.
Ugh.
It's just like, he looks like Mike Tenay with a mullet and a lazy eye.
He does look like Mike Tenay.
He looks just like him.
Jesus Christ, I've never, that's, yeah. That. It, listen, if that's like your Van Damme Sandow, but I totally see
it. Yeah, yeah, he looks just like him.
Yeah, yeah.
At this point.
He had one eye on Mike Tenay this whole show. So anyway, that's our angle to set up a match for later on. Yes, we were going to get more from the Rock and Roll Express.
Oh, boy.
Mike Sanders against Ron Killings was next. I had nothing against these two, but this went 7.5 minutes. And this was, you know, watching a pay-per-view, it's like, yeah, no commercials. Just like, you got matches like this.
Thing is, like, I mean, I'd always had, remember TNA, at least the perception of TNA and its early days for its X Division and for a lot, some of its great matches, but you didn't really get much of that even on this show. It was just a lot of angles.
There was no good match on this show, I thought. And that to me was something like, listen, you are catering to a hardcore fan. Like, okay, I can sit through a Ron Killings, Mike Sanders 7.5 minute match, but give me my one match that I'm really going to get into, okay? Mm-hmm. Like, I do tune into TNA where I want to see some good wrestling here.
You're paying $10.
Yeah, like, I don't just want the shoot promos and average matches that are 8 minutes here.
Sex jokes and...
If I got to sit through BG puns for this show, just
that's
give me
that's why
give
his
me
last name is James. His initials are BJ.
Oh, gosh. I would have hated to see, like, sex lead to, like... No, never mind. Mike Sanders and Ron Killings. Sanders walks out. He had just been part of this beatdown angle with the Rock and Roll Express and AMW. He walks to the back just to come out again on his own and get a separate entrance. Couldn't have stuck around in the ring.
It just goes to show you, I mean, it seemed like every match on this card was between a sex member and a TNA member.
Yeah, it was much like the invasion, where it was, you got all these matches, but it's like, well, what is this match settling? It's like, win or lose, this is going to just continue.
And I
what are we really fighting here?
I think it just shows how overpopulated this group was, even a month in its existence.
With such luminaries as Mike Sanders and the Harris brothers and BG. Sanders works on the left leg. He applies a leg lock. Truth finally gets up. After selling the leg for minutes, his comeback is getting to the top rope and hitting a missile dropkick as he tries to recover from his bad left leg.
No, well.
David Flair then shows up at ringside. Jerry Lynn attacks him, but then Truth bumps into Jerry Lynn on the apron, allowing Mike Sanders to roll up Killings for the win at 7:31. And then R-Truth and Jerry Lynn argue in the ring, teasing dissension amongst these two NWA TNAers.
Yeah. I thought they were teasing that Killings would be joining SEX.
No.
But no. They just, he's just a heel on his
own. Sex Killings. No. Yeah. The truth about sex. What could they have done?
You got another one?
I don't know. This is probably how he would have been marketed, though.
Yeah.
Anyway. Well, you could have had more jokes if he was still K-Quick.
No.
Yeah. Quick sex.
I don't know. Okay. Thanks.
I'm tired already, and we're not even like halfway into this show. I sat down and watched this whole thing in like one sitting.
Oh, wow.
I left this till the end.
I watched most of this. I mean, 2 hours isn't so bad. We're used to like three on Mondays, right?
Goldilocks is in the locker room with Sex and said that she thought that she liked the Rock and Roll Express, but then she saw the actions of Ricky Morton and Robert Gibson.
You said that with way more enthusiasm than she did.
Well, I barely said it with any, so that really compounds just how uninterested Goldilocks was here. Ricky Morton just took over here, and he said, "Back in the day, girls had real tits," as he stared at Goldilocks's tits.
Which could have been real.
They looked real.
Yeah.
I don't know.
It's hard to tell.
He then said, "We were the first ones to come out to music." Not true. "First ones to have pyro." Believe that was false. "First ones to have lights." Fuck. Put that on the LinkedIn resume. "We were the first ones to have lights in the arena." And "We're the only roosters left in the hen house." The fuck does that mean?
The only roosters left in the hen house.
He tied this into being the cock of the walk.
Right, okay.
Which I think he meant he missed numerous jokes that Russo was probably like, "Oh, cock of the walk. I should have rewritten this promo."
Oh, man.
Anyway, so Bob Armstrong walks in and yells, "Screw you," to the Rock and Roll Express and puts them in a match with America's Most Wanted for later tonight.
I just spent the entire segment looking at Robert Gibson's lazy eye.
It was watching whatever was going on in the arena while he was still making eye contact with the camera here. the eye was certainly wandering here. AJ Styles then comes out. This was what I like to affectionately refer to as his headband phase.
Oh, yes.
Where he was, I think, always worried about, like, getting frostbite.
he was just snowboarding.
He tells the crowd no less than 8 times to zip it, like he was Morton Downey Jr.
Right.
Not Robert Gibson in the back. The wrong Morton was in the back. Zip it! Zip it! I said zip it! He was so nervous cutting a promo here.
Well, yes, this was certainly a different AJ than the one we saw this past week on TNA.
He says he wants to be...
This is his real pipe bomb.
Oh, this was something else.
Yeah.
He wants to be heavyweight champion, and he lists the guys he has beaten, including Larry Zbysko. Then Raven walks in, also a heel at this point.
Hold on. You missed some lines. He says he's not having sex with Vince Russo, but he's the Mac Daddy of the X Division.
Who comes up with this shit?
There are also some great crowd signs here for AJ. One of them said, "AJ, no style." And another one just says, This is just written in straight black block letters. Clever. AJ doesn't need our support. That was a sign.
So there were some great signs I would find later on in this show. But Raven walks in, and the two decided to have a who's the better heel. Raven said that AJ looks like Elton John's life partner.
Ooh.
Yeah, nothing like some homophobia heat in 2003.
He's gay.
And that he's wearing an NSYNC starter kit. Way to really put your...
Oh, God.
Put over a...
It's so embarrassing to just watch.
I hate this stuff, especially when it's a fellow heel that you're just making look like a dork on TV.
They both look like dorks. I mean, the guy saying this sounds like more of a dork.
You know, I just listened to a podcast I'd really recommend. It's hearing Jerry Lawler on Steve Austin's podcast, and I just was listening to the first part of it. And Jerry Lawler talked about once cutting a promo on Jackie Fargo, and they were about to have a match together, and he referred to Jackie Fargo as an old man in the promo. And Fargo came into the back and just ripped Lawler apart, saying, "Listen, you and I are about to have a match where I'm going to beat you. And you've just established that I'm an old man, and this old man is going to beat you on TV. And your job is to get your opponent over so you have beaten someone. And that if you lose, you've also lost to somebody of importance. And that's what you should be doing when you're working with somebody, is that you can get your lines across, you can brag about your own talents, but you don't bury your opponent for that very reason." And this actually came up last week where with the John Jones Alexander Gustafsson fight, that John Jones was using a lot of time saying that Gustafsson, he's not at my level, I'm going to beat him. It's that you're trying to sell this opponent to people to make them believe that he is on your level. And there, it does no one any good for you to say ahead of time that that this guy's a joke to me, that this guy isn't on par with me. You are drawing based on how well you can draw on pay-per-view with an opponent. Mm-hmm. This was just kind of, you know, yeah, Raven probably came up with this and is like, yeah, this is really clever. NSYNC starter kit. Ha, ha, ha. I think it's funny. But it does nothing in terms of elevating the person you're in the ring with. Just makes him look like a dork here.
Yeah, but he was a heel, you know?
Well, I would question why this segment was even booked. Yeah. Like, you do have... One of the things that NWA TNA at this time was really good at was making the NWA title feel like the be-all and end-all. And it was never just the challenger of the month. It was always multiple people, and their storyline was hunting for that title shot. And you'd have crossover between programs of all these different contenders that were going around various pathways to the title. And that, to me, was really... had Jared Jarrett's fingerprints all over it, where the title was always booked strong, and you had multiple guys all gunning for that ultimate prize. And that's why the title, you know, trying to get the title over. But this segment here, if it's two heels together, I just didn't think it worked. Wasn't a big fan of it. So Styles then tells Raven,
"Why don't you hand over that world heavyweight title? Crawl your little self back to the sex locker room so you can shoot up with a little more heroin."
Unreal.
Yeah, how subtle.
So we had the NSYNC homosexual and the heroin shooter. What an angle here.
Yeah. Yeah.
I just, this
was the storyline, like the with Raven, was he known as
well, he's got a bit of a checkered past, yeah, when it comes to narcotics.
Was it even something they established on TV?
Well, remember, we had only seen Raven debut the prior week. This was like his first, he did that promo at the start of the show.
Right.
They didn't really have anything about Raven. It was okay. Just establishing this guy as a heroin addict, so according to AJ.
Yeah, referring to, internet rumors.
Yes.
Okay.
Jarrett then runs in, attacking both men, knocks Raven to the floor, and hits the stroke on AJ Styles, and takes his title back. Just like that, he has regained possession of it.
Yep. And then Tanae says, "Wow, how do you like that? Titles are not won in the boardroom here in TNA.
They're won in the asylum. Yeah. We're the shoot promotion."
Yeah. You just evidently go up and pick up the title from the ring.
Yeah, that's how stuff works. Yeah. You're in the asylum. Then... out walked Larry Zbysko. And you know how Larry Zbyszko conducts business? In his trunks. He walked out as AJ Styles is recovering from this beatdown, and Zbyszko gets on the mic and says, "I see a lot of myself in you, AJ." AJ has the talent, but not the knowledge yet. And he can have the life of a star. You can have a red Ferrari, a pool, and a bevy of deaf mutes around you. Mm. Larry might have been smoking in Larry Land before this promo. I don't know. He says that AJ has to go through the school of hard knocks. And if AJ can beat him twice in 10 minutes, Larry will do everything in his power to get AJ a title shot. And if AJ wasn't convinced, Larry adds, "I double dog dare you." And Styles says no, to which Larry just slaps him, and a match begins with these two. So we've got the tease of a mentor-student relationship between Zbyszko and Styles, and Larry's going to teach him the ropes here in this match.
In this match, AJ has to beat Larry twice in 10 minutes.
Yes. So they go 10 minutes here. Zbyszko controls him at the beginning. He works the leg, which seems to be the layout of every TNA match on this show. Work the leg. Styles rolls him up at the six-minute mark to get the first fall. And Tanay starts yelling into the truck to get an on-screen graphic. And they get one up pretty quickly. Zbyszko applies the Boston Crab when manager Mortimer Plumtree, who was aligned with AJ Styles, shows up at ringside, and he doesn't want to lose his client, AJ Styles, to Zbyszko. And he passes these brass knuckles to Styles, but Zbyszko blocks the shot, knocks them away. Plumtree then throws powder at Zbyszko, who ducks the powder, and Plumtree gets knocked off the apron. Zbyszko hits a neckbreaker, gets a two count. Then Plumtree puts a chair into the corner. As both men collide mid-ring, they go down with 30 seconds to go. An Irish whip sends AJ into the chair shot, then gets rolled up by a two as time expires. And then Plumtree is freaking out at the fact that they went a draw here. That Styles only pinned him once in the 10 minutes. I was not a big Mortimer Plumtree fan. To me, it was like too over-the-top, goofy pro-wrestling manager for my liking.
What did he end up doing?
He would leave the company. He would stick around for a little bit. I believe he was paired with the Naturals for a while. And then I think it was around 2005 he left the company. And he was just kind of, he would do a little bit of announcing, heel managing, and that was about it. He was never really a big, big character, but he was there in the early days.
And what, like, AJ was involved in the title picture at this point, right?
Kind of. They were trying to, get him out of the X Division title mix, and they were trying to make him into someone to take seriously.
Put him in with Raven and all that. Yeah. But then what was all this going on with Larry Zbyszko?
Well, it was like he had the title stuff, but that was kind of a back burner program. It was like a number of guys. Oh, okay. It was like they were ultimately going for the title, but they also had side issues. And this was, Larry Zbyszko mentoring him was kind of his sidebar issue. I think it was, to TNA's credit at this time, they did a pretty good job in terms of building up stuff. Like, this was the start of Raven Jeff Jarrett, which wouldn't happen until April the 30th of that year. They would hold off on that for 3 months. And by the time that pay-per-view happened, it actually did very well by their Wednesday night standards. And they let that thing simmer for 3 months. And doing weekly pay-per-views to hold off on it that long, I thought it was pretty incredible at the time, and you actually had a pretty big interest level for the first match between Jarrett and Raven. But that was kind of their layout at the time. Goldilocks is then in the ring and introduces Percy Pringle, a.k.a. the late Paul Bearer. My comments here are, Goldilocks is so terrible. She tells Percy, "I'm the new girl here. I'm trying to learn the ropes, and I've researched you. My research tells me that you're a well-respected man in this industry. Up until a few weeks ago, when you tried to join sex, and they turned on you." And Percy uses this time to plug the Cauliflower Alley Club, because he's going to be honored in Las Vegas later that year. And he's worked his ass off for that plaque, unlike Vincent Russo. Says that Russo will never be honored at the Cauliflower Alley Club, and he's pissed. at his blood being spilled in this ring, and he's not going anywhere. He's not running away from sex. He's running towards sex. Percy wants sex.
Oh, okay.
And then, who should enter the ring but Hawaiian Tropics lookalike Tony Schiavone here, who looks like he was on some vacation, wearing a Kiss t-shirt, a Hawaiian shirt, like dyed hair, and a beard. This dude looked like he had just walked out of a time warp, out of like 1983 or something, from a college dorm.
It looked like he had not had a job in 2 years and just came in.
Which, in fairness, was what they were trying to push here.
Yeah.
That this man has been unemployable in wrestling, which he did not have a job in wrestling since WWE went out of business, but he was quick to navigate the TBS system, got involved with the Atlanta Braves minor league baseball, which he's still involved with now. He's done fine. But he gets in there, compliments Pringle, but says, I have never seen someone kiss someone's ass like you did a couple of weeks ago. And Mike Tenay notes that this was the associate he was referring to. And he compliments, he then starts talking about the fact that he hasn't had a job in wrestling for 2 years. And says, Goldilocks, as in, who's been sleeping in my bed, Goldilocks? Very clever by Schiavone. He says he understands why Goldilocks is here. She's here for the tits and ass, pure and simple. And says, you make Pamela Paulshock look like Diane Sawyer.
Ooh.
Which maybe three people in this arena realized who Pamela Paulshock was. Of course, the WCW announcer from the dying days. Says that Goldilocks is a blonde bimbo, and instead of this microphone, maybe you should be holding something else. Like a penis. I'm spelling it out. I've got to break this down for the folks at home that have not seen this.
I thought this was tremendously entertaining.
Listen, Tony Schiavone being a heel, there was a certain charm to it. Like the straight, long-time TBS, TNT, play-by-play commentator, all of a sudden being a dick heel, there was certainly entertainment value to it. He then says he brings Mike Tenay into the ring, who looks very upset here at Tony's actions, as Tenay is getting him to stop berating Goldilocks. This woman named Goldilocks, first of all. That's her name. Schiavone says he thought TNA would be a great return to wrestling for him. Cites his history in the NWA during the 80s, part of Mid-Atlantic, into WCW, and says while Mike Tenay was writing dirt sheets in Las Vegas, he was calling some of the greatest wrestling in the world. Tenay then says, I made your job easier on those three-man booths by knowing what wrestling was. Schiavone says, Mike, you believing that Vince Russo cost us our jobs was bullshit. Vince Russo got onto the Titanic while it was already on the way down. The crowd here, hearing this shoot promo, responded with chants of boring and says people like Mike Tenay are ruining wrestling. They would have hated Gorgeous George. They would have stopped Andy Kaufman from joining wrestling and would have turned on Hulkamania. Sports entertainment is growing the industry. Then Vince Russo comes out, and everyone is shouting over one another. The Vince Russo run-in, by the way, they did not know Vince Russo was going to run in. That was a legit surprise.
Why? Why did he do that?
I think they wanted Mike Tenay to be talking more or something, and Russo just, I don't know if he wanted to throw them off or what he was doing. This is where I saw two signs in the background. One that read, who cares, with a question mark, and the other that read, the total nonstop action has officially stopped. Russo then tells Tenay, blow me! Blow me, Mike! And invites Tony to join sex, where they don't backstab each other. Tenay says, well, Tony, your motto always was, any way the wind blows. And Schiavone, essentially meaning that whoever's in power, he will navigate his feelings to be in sync with. And then Schiavone, what a low blow here, says that Scott Hudson could do your job in a heartbeat, and he would cost less to fly in from Atlanta than you in Las Vegas, bitch. His trans is lower. Oh. And Tony says it's always about politics. What a fucking segment this was.
This was amazing.
Great performance from all people.
Tony Schiavone, who apparently afterwards just he hated his performance here. He thought he was atrocious.
Why?
I don't know. I don't know the man. But listen, as just in terms of being a guy who could, you know, cut a promo, great delivery, but the content was just I don't know how anyone could give a shit about this. I think that there's such a disbelief that people care about this kind of stuff. And as much as, you know, the CM Punk promo was great, it was the talk of the wrestling world. Like, Money in the Bank didn't do anywhere, I think, what people expected. Like, there was a modest increase of buys that Money in the Bank did. And to me, that is the best case scenario of one of these promos. And this, to me, is one of the worst ones with Schiavone. Like, this was just trying to appease people that are, like, the most hardcore fans that would know any of this shit. It just seemed like it was, let's just get guys to shoot about stuff that happened behind the scenes in WCW 2 years ago, and wrestling fans are going to care about this stuff. I just think they had a bad read on what wrestling fans really wanted.
What were they even trying to push?
I don't know. I don't know what they were trying. I think Schiavone made one more appearance in TNA, and then he never appeared again. This was like this weird footnote of Tony Schiavone's end in terms of being on camera and wrestling. It's like the guy was always the straight play-by-play announcer. Let's make him a heel for one night. And there was no thought past that. Let's make him the heel commentator or something like that. Just seemed really weird. I wasn't a big fan of this. Don West has to follow this with a voiceover while we get an extreme close-up of a woman's ass wearing a thong in a cage as Don West is throwing to a video package on Sonny Siaki and Kid Cash. Just like straight up in a girl's ass.
Yeah, the TNA dancers.
Yeah. So we got this video on Kid Cash and Trinity and their feud with Sonny Siaki and his valet, Desire, who would later, in a trivia note, appear on Biggest Loser. Oh. She actually had a kid with Sonny Siaki, put on a ton of weight, and then would appear on Biggest Loser years later. But this was her wrestling background. And then we got a mixed tag match with Sonny Siaki and Desire against Cash and Trinity. They went about 6 minutes. Siaki and Desire, also members of Sex, has to be the biggest faction in history. Everyone's part of this group. Cash did some cool spots in this match, including scaling to the top and hitting a Hurricane Rana, which got little reaction. Siaki was the current X Division champion at the time. Cash then hit a springboard forward flip that he called the 130 Edge. Then Trinity came in, hit a moonsault off the top to the floor onto Sonny Siaki. Trinity also did a lot of stunt work in movies, so she was more athletic than most of the women at this point in TNA. Trinity then did a flying armbar to Desire, then did this jumping kick that totally missed Desire. And then Siaki lifts and drops Trinity throat first on the top rope. Another woman runs in, Athena, who gets onto the apron, goes for Desire, who the announcers state she has heat with. And it leads to Trinity rolling up Desire at 6 minutes and 17 seconds. I think this was the third match where we got outside interference and someone was distracted and we got a roll-up finish on this card.
I think this was the third match, period.
I think you're right. It was match number 3. Not much to this match. Some good offense from Kid Cash, but nothing great. Schiavone is back to make fun of Mike Tenay for having the audacity to call wrestling moves. And asks if he just casually asks, did they allow the slut to interfere in all of these matches? What's the deal here with the slut? And he hands the X Division title over to Sonny Siaki. And I think his role here was to be the asshole TV guy. Because he gets into the ring and says to Siaki and Desire, All right, let's look at the hard camera here. Let's look at the hard camera here. And then to Siaki and Desire, he says, Okay, guys, let's forget about the sluts that run around here and talk about the match. And they mentioned that next week, Siaki will defend the X Division title against the Amazing Red. And then out of nowhere, Conan runs in, attacking Siaki with kendo stick shots. And he has no contract with TNA, they explain. And he starts yelling at Mike Tenay and saying, "You're the problem." And security is trying to stop Conan. And Conan says he will give Mike Tenay an interview next week.
There's just so much happening.
Way too much happening.
There's just like one storyline on top of another. Nothing really gets resolved.
Total nonstop angles.
Yeah.
So Conan, future interview to come here. Goldilocks is with Jeff Jarrett and tells Russo that he is going to regret the day he ever met him. Which, maybe that was another shoot comment. Rock and Roll Express against America's Most Wanted. Weird match here, because you would think if you've got the Rock and Roll Express, I mean, people coming up in wrestling study Ricky Morton and his selling because of what a great babyface he is. Like, he is the template for a babyface in peril in tag wrestling. So he's a heel in this match, just because. Guess that was the idea with Shivani as well. Just because. Let's make him a heel, because they never have. AMW storms the ring. They begin the match having the early advantage. Harris holds Gibson up for a missile dropkick as Storm comes off the top. Morton eventually trips James Storm from the outside against the apron, and the Express get the advantage. Storm hits a sunset flip, roll up on Morton, but the referee's back is turned. They keep Storm isolated in their corner. Storm finally hits a double clothesline, makes the hot tag. Gibson gets sent to the floor. They hit the death sentence to Ricky Morton, but the referee gets distracted. And then Elix Skipper, who they had said earlier was not in the building, does appear, comes off the top rope with the title, hitting Storm from behind with the referee distracted. And Ricky Morton pins James Storm at 8:47. So the Rock and Roll Milfers get the win. And then Brian Lee and Slash, who comprised the tag team of the New Church, they then attack Elix Skipper, establishing that they are not aligned with sex, because sex and church don't go together. They would have been maybe premarital sex prevents them from joining sex. The New Church. The New Church doesn't approve of this kind of thing. Anyway, a lot happened in this show, Way. It's all dizzying to me at this point.
I'm very confused. I didn't know these guys.
Slash and Brian Lee. Which Slash, he was part of my favorite TNA promo ever in 2002 when he had this tag partner named Cobain.
Oh.
And they cut this promo, and to this day, me and my two buddies that used to watch these shows, like, we'll pull up that promo every now and again, and it's still, like, the greatest thing ever.
Yeah, it's, why? Why was it so, why
I'll play it for you. I'll try and find it. They plug next week. They would do this every week where Don West would do the hard sell for what was coming up next week. They plugged the Conan interview, a four-way elimination match with Jerry Lynn, Ron Killings, Mike Sanders, and David Flair. Can't wait for that one. Sonny Siaki against Red for the X title, and then Slash and Brian Lee against Triple X for the tag titles. Then we go to Shivani in the sex locker room, who says, "Thanks a lot, Jim Crockett and Johnny Weaver," who were legendary broadcast duo in the Mid-Atlantic days. Johnny Weaver, big part of the that Mid-Atlantic territory of the Carolinas and Virginia. Russo cuts a promo on Jarrett and wants him to defend the title against Raven. Raven wants the title shot tonight, as I look down and see 4 minutes left in this show. Jarrett then storms the locker room, attacking everyone, as Tenay is talking about what big balls Jeff Jarrett has. They fight to ringside with chairs and trash cans. Russo tries to stop Jarrett and allows Raven to hit a low blow, the even flow DDT, and then a drop toehold onto the chair. There was a Botchamania level sequence as Raven and Russo together can't get a table inside of the ring past the ropes. Then Jarrett blocks a superplex, puts Raven through his own table, and then hits a belt shot to Raven. Jarrett calls Russo into the ring, but then AJ Styles shows up attacking Jarrett from behind and hits the stroke onto the title and poses with the title. AJ Styles leaves with the title as Mike Tenay and Don West do a big sell going off the air asking who's with who. And then as Vince Russo tries to climb in, we go off the air with Mike Tenay yelling, "Stop Russo! Stop him!" Oh my God, man. I've got the shakes right now from talking about this show. Too much energy expended here.
On this dizzying
event of NWA TNA.
Well, I feel the opposite. I feel completely drained.
Oh, man.
I just found it a very cliche wrestling program, just with the faction wars, the belt stealing, and just swerve on top of swerve and all the meaningless returns.
Swerves and pervs. The NWA TNA 2003 run.
So,
what do you give the show, Way?
I don't know.
Were you jonesing to see the next week's episode and spend another $10?
No.
You're dead. You're out of it, Way.
No, I'm laying on the floor right now.
You gotta get some energy.
Yeah.
All right. I thought this was a pretty bad show overall in terms of a weekly show. Like, let's remember, this was a $10 show. You had to pay for this.
Mm-hmm.
So I give this show a 2 out of 10.
Mm.
You know, they had some bigger picture stuff at the time, which I'll give them credit for, but as a standalone show, pretty bad. All the stuff I really tend to hate about Vince Russo-style booking was overly represented on this show. Way too much internet shoot shit that never has interest past, like, a few people on a message board, it feels like. A real miscalculation, I think, of what wrestling fans tune into wrestling for. So that was a big negative for me. Tony Schiavone was funny, but not someone that I needed to see in this role. And no good wrestling on this show either. So pretty thumbs down show overall. Anything to add? Let's get into your feedback. We'll start off with Paul from the UK. There were some incredible fashion choices on this show between AJ's dual earrings, BG James looking like a massive pumpkin, and Jeff Jarrett's passe mullet and tinted sunglasses combination. The show felt pretty hick. The sex storyline felt like they came up with the punny name sex first and worked backwards from there, throwing in every opportunity to shout at the audience that they were saying sex. Oh, and how about those edgy sex cage dancers for every entrance? Just like Kimona getting her nips out at the ECW arena. Really, they looked so bored at times. Sex! This was when the WWE was a little isolating and weren't really taking care of their legends with legends contracts like they do today. So a lot of old-timers found their way to TNA at one time or another. While it was a nice nostalgia pop when one would show up, a lot of these legends felt stuffed into the ongoing storylines and be gone a few weeks later. Some might argue this was a great way to use them. There were some baffling mismatches in TNA at the time with great wrestlers like AJ and Jerry Lynn paired with the old and plain bad Larry Zbysko and David Flair respectively. However, the show definitely wasn't boring with these odd legend appearances, early showings from TNA originals, and of course, sex at every turn.
Up next, we got Brian from Ireland, who says,
oh, this looks awesome.
I was a fan of TNA when they switched to the six sides and Monty Brown, AJ, Daniels, and Joe were making Impact interesting. But the dark, dark days of Nashville and Russo like this, Russo at this time seemed to love bringing in old name value wrestlers to put over the young talent. He also liked to bring in no name value for the same purpose. David Flair, Mike Sanders, Disco Inferno, etc., which speaks volumes on his forward thinking. Also, Russo's famed love of work shoot bullshit. First it was BG James in the role of Brutus Clay with his wardrobe choice, then Schiavone, but I couldn't hear half his promo because of the volume of his shirt. Then Conan appeared and promised a shoot for the next week. Then came his trademark swerves. As near as I can remember, there wasn't one clean finish to any of these matches apart from Red and Carmen Sandiego or whatever he was, whoever he was wrestling, and there was a swerve after that match. Russo even swerved the alphabet for sex because technically it should be S-E-E, but hey, he's Vince Russo. He doesn't take orders from anyone, not even the English language. We were lucky there was nothing on a pole apart from those miserable-looking girls in the shark cages because that would have filled any Russo bingo card. I know this was one of the old weekly pay-per-view models, but the Jarretts were shocked it didn't work. But come on now, the first 15 minutes was backwards and the rest was just a constant diuretic barrage of bullshit. If I'd paid $10 for this, I'd have wanted 20 back. Awful show, 1 out of 10. And he gives a mathematical breakdown of the show.
He designed a pie chart where he breaks down. We've got 40% here of swerves, 20% other old wrestlers, 10% of Larry Zbysko in a Speedo, 20% shoot promos, 5% good matches, 5% white trash twerking in a cage. Some great work there done by Brian from Ireland. We go to Kevin in Ireland. Wow. how TNA has changed in the last 10 years. Looking back at the show, they had an ECW original as champion, some probably very expensive outside talent coming in and doing nothing for the business, a faction that nobody really cared for, and to top it off, a personality who isn't an in-ring talent cutting a shoot promo. Yep, TNA has come a long way.
Ronaldo from Milan, Italy. Seriously, three combined weeks of Nash and Russo, and here I was thinking I was on the right track to quit drinking. Oh well, in all seriousness, and I might be in the minority, I didn't find this to be such a bad show. Sure, I'll never understand Russo's obsession with turning the most popular faces in wrestling heel, first Goldberg and then the Rock and Roll Express, just to shock the fans, but I've learned to live with it. Some of the matches were good, some not. Some just spot fest where guys were trying to cram as much crap as they could as if they were auditioning for WWE. But all in all, it made for variety, though under no circumstance should Jerry Lynn ever job to David Flair. I don't care if he gets hit by a chair, a briefcase, a brick, or nuclear missile. David Flair had his moment of glory when he got beat up by The Undertaker during the road to WrestleMania 18, and that's what his claim to fame should be, so why try the Slick David experiment over and over again? How Raven could manage to somehow shine through Russo's bullshit is a mystery and a miracle. Stone Cold Jeff Jarrett is amusing. Heel Schiavone eclipsed anything he ever did in WCW. And while it was obviously a work, I bet my right ball, 70% of what he said was truly felt. He's no Jim Ross, but he's truly underrated as far as announcers go. But hell, years of WCW would probably kill anyone's love for the business. In closing, would someone please tell Russo, Dixie, Hogan, Eric, and anyone else that speaking about your competition and what your talent did in that organization during an entire show reeks of Bush League?
And finally, Trent from Texas. Throughout wrestling history, the Road Dogg has probably had consistently the douchiest moments of any wrestler I've ever seen. You watch anything he did 10 to 15 years ago, and it's very cringeworthy and hard to watch because it's so embarrassing. His line about getting a lesson in group sex tops everything he has ever done in terms of giving me douche chills. I was not watching the product at this time, but was this a common term when the sex faction would beat down on some wrestlers? Would Mike Tenay shout out, "We're about to get some group sex," or "Are you ready for some group sex" every time this would happen? This show, for the most part, was extremely embarrassing to watch, and it seemed like Vince Russo had complete control over every aspect of it. The only good that has come out of Vince Russo in the wrestling world post-WWF is your reviews of the shows he has booked. Can't wait for you guys to tear this apart. 2 out of 10. Thank you, folks, for those of you that endured this this particular episode of NWA TNA from 2003. And as we get on out of your way, we kind of teased it earlier, but next week, you know, I suggested doing this review of this documentary, and then watching this show, it was insane how much tie-in there is to next week's review. We are going to take a look at a documentary that's getting a lot of rave reviews that has just come out. It's called The Good Old Days, and it's a look at the history of the Mid-Atlantic Territory and the NWA eventually morphing into WCW when Ted Turner bought it. And looking at that territory, the expansion at the time, competing with the WWF, starting off the Starrcade events in 1983, and all of their wars with the WWF at the time. So should be a really, really fun show next week. We just got a copy of the documentary, so I don't know how much feedback we'll get about it because it is just released, but we'll take a look at it next week. And we're going to do an inter-show review, so to speak, because me and Way are going to review it. And then on next week's Bauer and Pollock show, the producer of the documentary is going to join Court and myself to chat about it. So a little companion piece there for Review Away next cool. week. And right. I guarantee you it'll be better than this episode, Way.
Nice.
All right. So that'll bring us to a close, everybody. So thanks for tuning in. In the meantime, Sunday night, we've got The Law, which is up on the site. Myself and Jason Agnew running through all of the news and chatting with Ariel Helwani and Brian Alvarez on the show. And then Monday night's Review of Raw, that is up. We'll be back on this week with Review and Impact, new edition of the MMA Report, where I'll be chatting with Tommy Toehold, who does some great MMA videos as well. You'll hear from Bellator lightweight champion Michael Chandler. Lots of stuff coming up this week. And as we get on out of here, Way, what would you like to finish off? Because I think there's a number of different ways we could go here for a musical accompaniment to properly cap off this sex-fueled edition of NWA TNA.
Well, there certainly is, but I found a pretty appropriate one here. This was Nickelback.
Oh.
With S-E-X.
Very appropriate. Well, that will take us out here. Nothing like Nickelback to summarize this particular episode that many people panned. In the meantime, go check out liveaudiowrestling.com. You can subscribe to all of our podcasts for free on iTunes by simply searching for Live Audio Wrestling, and on Twitter, at Law Radio, at I Am John Pollock, and at Way0937. We'll be back later this week. We've got a lot of catching up to do when it comes to Impact. I'm very excited. Quickly, Way, that Dixie Carter promo last week.
Mm-hmm.
I guess we kind of talked about it on Monday's review of Raw, but
yeah.
One for the ages. Just really, this particular episode of NWA TNA, it really does shine a light on how far wrestling has come.
Where, not really.
Well, I'm being facetious here, that we're getting the same stuff.
Yeah.
10 years later. Amazing. All right, here's Nickelback. Goodbye, everybody. This show has been brought to you by Sex.
If anything, I went out of my way each and every week to make your job easier, and you know that.
I heard you out here talking to Vince Russo about how Vince Russo had you sitting at home. You know what I say to that, Mike? Bullshit!
Vince Russo cost me my job, and he cost you your job, and he cost hundreds of other people their job with WCW, and that's a fact.
Baloney. He jumped on the Titanic before it hit the iceberg. It was going down anyway. You know it, and I know it. What is keeping pro wrestling down is people like you. If you would have been around in the 1950s, would you have liked Gorgeous George? Hell no, you wouldn't have liked it. You'd have kept him down. What about Andy Kaufman?
Hardly the case.
What about Andy Kaufman in the deal in the 70s with him? Would you have gone for that? No, because it wouldn't meet up to your standards. You would have buried Hulkamania. You would have buried the NWA. You would have buried the NWO. You would have done all that, Mike, because Vince Russo doesn't like things the
right,
way you like it.
Vince Russo doesn't belong in wrestling.
Jeff Jarrett, I will do what I must to show you the error of your ways. If I have to, I will urinate in your bone marrow. I will rip off your neck and use it for a latrine.